I'm really excited to speak with Beth Holzman, who is the CSR Strategy and Reporting Manager at Timberland. And I've been a longtime admirer of Timberland's programs and their ethos as a socially responsible company. So, Beth, I'm really delighted to speak with you and hear more about it from the inside of a company. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Could you share briefly your background and how that led you to come work at Timberland in CSR strategy and reporting?
Sure. I have a background in working actually in the NGO and advocacy community. I've done a bunch of different work working for different environmental groups, and particularly looking at accountability and sustainability metrics. And so working at Timberland is actually my first time working inside a company, but prior to Timberland, I worked with a few organizations that either sometimes advocated against companies or sometimes worked in partnership developing sustainability strategy, helping to convene different stakeholders and also working on sustainability reporting. What's interesting about what I do now here inside the company, it's very similarly focused on some of those key areas. So my background in the NGO and advocacy community working on similar issues has afforded me to have a different type of, I would say, corporate responsibility education, and then working inside Timberland as a company that really is trying to leverage its business to be a force of good in the world is a great opportunity for me to both learn firsthand how decisions get made inside the business and apply some of my background and understanding of working with lots of different apparel and footwear and other consumer product companies, but also allows me to bring some of that external stakeholder perspective to business decision making that we do here at Timberland.
I mean, you bring not a typical corporate background, but certainly a deep understanding of sustainability and SMB evaluation, which is a big component for companies now in trying to figure out and communicate the evaluation of their efforts. And I want to get into that later in our talk. So,
I've spent a lot of time doing a lot of that evaluation, and so being able to take some of the work that I've done in evaluating sustainability reports or looking at different stakeholder and, you know, whether they be issue-based, you know, climate practitioners or socially responsible investment firms that have, you know, evaluated sustainability data over the years. I've been able to take some of that experience and bring it in-house at Timberland to apply to our transparency and accountability agenda.
Well, let's talk about that now then, and then I'll go back. About 2 years ago, Timberland started producing quarterly sustainability updates. How has this helped Timberland communicate with the investor community and with socially responsible investor sectors? And what was the impetus behind doing quarterly updates, which sounds like a big commitment in terms of work and also really sharing what a company is doing well and what it's not doing so well?
Yeah, so we designed our quarterly reporting process to model our quarterly shareholder process. And we started doing these updates about 2 years ago in the beginning of 2008. And we were really at an interesting decision point in terms of how we wanted to look at sustainability reporting as a driver and also measurement tool within the company. We had just come off winning a nice award for some of our disclosure and stakeholder engagement work, and we also had been issuing at that point in about 2006, 2007 when we were evaluating our current models, we've been issuing formal CSR reports since 2000. So we've been doing this for a long time. And we recognized that, you know, looking at the type of information we were disclosing as well as the stakeholders that were using and reading our reports, that we weren't necessarily reaching all of the stakeholders that we wanted to engage. And so as we were looking to alter our models to try to expand our stakeholder pools of different folks that we can interact with and also share information with those folks, we also recognized that we wanted to work on a process or work on a frequency that gave people data in a way that they were comfortable or maybe more used to digesting it. And so that was our initial idea of issuing our sustainability information in a quarterly process. So as I said, it would model the shareholder process. I think for us, it's really helped us demonstrate how we manage CSR issues like any other issues or programs within our company. We have robust data sets and evaluation processes inside the company to measure our value chain, to measure our financial operations. And so putting a process in place that allowed us to measure and evaluate our CSR programs in the same way allowed us to have some internal benefits. But I think we also were able to demonstrate to the wider stakeholder community, including the investor community, that CSR evaluation was being incorporated into our business decision making in the same way that our other programs evaluation was doing. Now, I can say that in some feedback that we've gotten, we have learned that, you know, being able to demonstrate that frequency of reporting, but also, you know, the management of our different performance in those categories and disclosing it on such a frequent basis has created a level of trust with stakeholders in terms of how we're putting our data together and the fact that they have so much access to that information. But I can also say that we're definitely still at a point where we're trying to figure out, you know, how mainstream investors are really valuing and comparing that information. You know, a lot of times I hear from asset managers that sustainability information is really something that's to be valued over the long term, which we agree with, and that's why we've kept our biannual CSR reporting to complement the quarterly reporting. We haven't just gone to this short-term time frame. In fact, the short-term time frame is supposed to supplement and provide additional communication about our performance over time so that we can take that long-term view. But I think that, you know, asset managers, from what I've heard, don't necessarily look at sustainability data the same way that they look at financial data in that quarterly or more short-term time frame. I had an interesting call this morning. I was actually talking with some folks at Bloomberg who have just recently incorporated environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, information into their terminals. And it's great to see a mainstream financial company like Bloomberg providing that information to their clients. And they've said that, you know, they've had a lot more interest in ESG data since they've added it to the mainstream terminals. But we still don't have a ton of information about who's using that data. I think it's part of our job to help provide that information to our stakeholders, and hopefully as the financial sector and other investors are learning more about it, they're figuring out how to incorporate or value different companies' sustainability performance. But I think we're definitely still at an early period with that. You know, I think what's also interesting is looking at how quarterly reporting or any type of sustainability reporting is really being incorporated into this short-term and long-term thought process. Obviously, in the current economy, we have a lot of opinions being circulated about, you know, the need for even Wall Street to be taking a much longer-term view. And so as the financial sector and as our overall society starts to think about those questions even more, I think we need to continue to ensure that sustainability information is a part of those conversations and hopefully can also be a driver for different type of evaluation of businesses.
You mentioned that you'd won this award. It was from Series for Sustainability Reporting. And part of what you've been focused on is ways to engage diversified stakeholders. And I think, as you said, that's what drove the more frequent reporting and updates. But because stakeholders, I mean, they're from consumers to suppliers to investors, as we talked about, are there other ways that you found helpful and ways you presented information that engage these different sectors?
Well, I definitely think that stakeholder engagement is crucial to our transparency and accountability, but it also helps us be authentic and relevant to different stakeholder constituencies. And so when we define stakeholders, we're not just talking about, you know, NGOs or issue experts or maybe socially responsible investors, but we've really broadened our definition of stakeholders to include consumers and include people you might not think of as traditional CSR kind of influencers or data users. And so with that in mind, I think, you know, engagement around our report creation or any type of engagement that we do is really important because we want to make sure that our programs are informed by folks who are either impacted by our business or have the ability to impact us. And so when we look at stakeholder engagement or really any of our CSR programs, we want to ensure that we're being responsive and accountable for our business's material impacts. And so all the engagement that we do, as well as all of the strategy development that we do, which is always informed by stakeholder engagement, focus on our four CSR pillars, which are climate and energy, product stewardship, and promoting fair, safe, and non-discriminatory workplaces, which often covers first and foremost our factories where our products are made, including, you know, labor and human rights issues, and then service, which is our commitment to engaging communities and being responsible citizens in that manner. And so this is kind of my long answer to say, you know, what's worked and how are we looking to use our report to reach out to different stakeholders? Well, I think that the idea of engaging stakeholders in our programmatic development as well as in the process of developing our report helps us ensure that we are relevant in getting feedback on our programs from different stakeholder constituencies. But I think that it's also important to ensure that our report itself targets different audiences in its distribution and communication approaches. And so you'll find in our last report, which is our 2007 and 2008 CSR report that was released last fall, we purposely were ensuring that the report could be used by different types of stakeholders who might have different entry points. So, for example, for the first time, we issued a very small report. It was about 30 pages long, and that's about a third, if not smaller, than our previous report in terms of length and amount of content. And we did that because we wanted to make sure that different types of stakeholders who might not read an 100-page report would actually have interest and reason and opportunity to go through the different impact areas and stories and data sets that are in that report. But we also know that some stakeholders are looking for a lot more information. They want to know some of the strategy behind the stories. They want to understand what some of the more complex details are involved. And so in addition to this 30-page report, we issued 4 complementary Dig Deeper papers, which correspond, again, to our 4 CSR pillars, or 4 material impacts. And they really focused on our key strategy and performance and approaches to managing and working within those programs. In addition to that, we also had the opportunity to launch an online discussion that was launched at the same time as the CSR report and designed to focus on a key question or challenge that we're faced in each one of those 4 areas as a way to bring different stakeholders into the conversation and help inform our strategy development, because, you know, we don't have all the answers, and we're definitely looking to learn from others, not just peer companies and, you know, folks that are climate experts or human rights experts, but also everyday consumers. You never know where you're going to get good ideas or good feedback from. And then finally, we also issued a very short and high-level brochure that can be found in all of our retail stores worldwide, and it's also been translated into about 10 different languages. And that really is just a high-level overview of Timberland's commitment to CSR and our 4 key pillar areas, and then it drives people online to our report in more depth and also to the earthkeeper.com site for anyone who wants to learn more or find different ways to engage with us. So that kind of full reporting suite, as I like to call it, I think, you know, really demonstrates our attempt to be understanding of the fact that people use and are interested in sustainability programs or in businesses' commitment to sustainability in different ways. And so one of the reasons I think we may have won the award, but also something that's really important to us in terms of making sure that type of accountability has relevance, is to target and reach out to all of these different types of stakeholder constituencies and also different ways that they may choose to use or interact with our information.
So when you're creating that, because it really is complex and you've got to think about what exactly, as you mentioned, what information people are looking for, what formats they like to find it in, how they want to digest it. So are you working with Timberland's communication and marketing or consumer input staff, or is this really a cross-company collaboration?
It's definitely a collaboration. You know, we work with our communication staff. We work with our design staff. We have help in terms of writing. I'm a pretty in the weeds type of person. I manage, you know, most of our performance processes as well as our strategy development and stakeholder engagement. So I'm not the first person you would necessarily put in front of a consumer to talk about consumer trends and our commitment to being green, only because a lot of what I might talk about gets very quickly into some of our, you know, detailed accounting for carbon emissions or looking at different human rights protocols in different areas. And so one of the things that I've tried to do is ensure that as we are looking to engage with different stakeholders, that we're tapping into the expertise we have in all different parts of the business to make sure that we're hopefully reaching them.
I wrote a recent article on Accenture's survey of, it was Accenture and the United Nations, so they did a survey of CEOs around the globe that revealed that brand trust and reputation were CEOs' primary considerations for sustainability programs. And these were ahead of revenue growth and cost reduction and employee retention and recruitment. So do you think companies are putting too much pressure on programs to drive reputation and trust? Are they not? Are they putting too much pressure on that as opposed to what the cost reductions in terms of resources and waste elimination are and the employee components of it? And if not, how should a company do this without getting called out for greenwashing or cause washing?
Yeah, well, I don't think that there's necessarily too much pressure. And our CEO, Jeff Schwartz, was actually interviewed for part of that CEO study, and we were pleased to be a part of it. You know, I think when we're looking at the increase of in interest and kind of uptake of corporate responsibility, I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, I think what's different from maybe some companies that are newer to this space is that it has become very much a brand exercise or maybe a marketing exercise. For Timberland, we've been doing a lot of this stuff for a long time, you know, in some cases since the formation of our company over 30 years ago. And so I think that, you know, when you look at what's necessary to ensure that you're not getting caught in a greenwashing trap is that you really need to be authentic and credible. And so in our case, you know, having strong programs that back up our claims, but also data and inform stakeholder input that can help us ensure that we are being relevant and accountable for our impact is a really good backbone to have for any of the, you know, claims or campaigns that you might have that might be more intriguing to a consumer or as a way to kind of demonstrate your corporate responsibility to the larger public. I do think that corporate responsibility can be a business driver, and I think that that's based on two things. I think certainly corporate responsibility can help create value for a company, but I also think that it does reduce risk. And in addition to, you know, helping, we hope, to generate revenue growth and cost reduction, as you mentioned. On the value creation side, you know, I think for us, really trying to leverage this model of commerce and justice, ensuring that we can leverage our overall commitment to social and environmental responsibility is something that allows us to help to have an opportunity to have an authentic conversation with consumers. As we've seen increased consumer interest in corporate responsibility or accountability in some ways, I think that there is an opportunity to use credible programs as a way to differentiate your brand. And I think in our case, you know, we're an outdoor brand that has a long-standing commitment to environmental stewardship and some very credible programs to back up those commitments. And so that has helped us in some ways, I think, be a credible voice and put, you know, maybe growing green products into the marketplace. But it's not just something that we're doing to try to sell more footwear, although as a public company, certainly that's the goal. But we're trying to do that in a responsible way that helps initiate a conversation with consumers, but also allows us to use our commitment to help drive increasing value to the business. I also mentioned that I think CSR can help be a business driver because it reduces risk. And some of that relates to cost savings, you know, changing out all of our light bulbs at our facilities to ensure that we're using energy efficiency LEDs and things like that. You know, that has real cost savings, and it's great when we can tie direct business benefit to some of our social and environmental initiatives. But I also think that some of the work we're doing in the human rights space and in engaging our communities, you know, that really provides us a license to operate within those communities, whether it's our local New Hampshire community and being a responsible business in and around our corporate headquarters, or it's the commitment to our code of conduct that we bring to communities where our contract factories are located, and we want to be responsible businesses there and also ensure that we're providing opportunities through our business to improve the lives of workers as a result of sourcing from that particular factory.
So, and as you mentioned, Timberland has a long history of this. I mean, you've been working with City Year since 1989 and have been offering employees 40 hours a year of paid time off to volunteer since 1997. How did this become part of Timberland's culture? Was that from within past management? Was it just associated with the identity of the brand from the beginning?
Well, it has been a big part of the brand from the beginning. You know, and I do also want to mention that we've been offering the benefit of 40 hours of paid community service time since 1995, just to correct that or clarify that for a minute. You know, I like to tell a story about our founders. You know, our founding family is still at the helm of our company, even though we're a public company. The Swartz family has been involved since its inception, and Jeff Swartz is a third-generation CEO. And so when I look at the leadership that we've had within the company, you know, I look first to Jeff's grandfather, Nathan, who was a craftsman. I mean, he's someone who we really associate with, you know, really understanding how beautiful, durable boots are made. And one of the things that I think makes that so interesting is that, you know, he also really cared about our workers who at the time were, you know, based in New England producing products. And, you know, one of the ways that our waterproof boots, our yellow boot, was created was the fact that workers had wet feet on the floor. And so we were not only developing products to appeal to consumers, but we also wanted to make sure that our workers were taken care of and that they had the opportunity to have safe and healthy working conditions, which, of course, extends, you know, throughout our entire supply chain today. You know, our Jeff's father, Sidney Swartz, is credited with really building kind of our brand and our global business. And I think one of the things that makes Sidney's leadership so unique is that he took what our kind of values-based commitments were and didn't change any of that as we, you know, created a retail presence in Italy and as we expanded to Asia. And so really ensuring that we stayed true to our values as we expanded our business was an important model. And then we look at Jeff, who's our current CEO, who really is, I think, credited with kind of formalizing this commitment or this belief in this commerce and justice model. But when you think about what Jeff is doing and how he's really catapulted our brand and his own commitment to these issues, to be what we hope is to have, you know, some sort of leadership in the space, it's not that he's doing things that are so different than his father or his grandfather. I think that, you know, we've always had this real commitment to being a values-based brand, but also ensuring that, you know, we were being stewards and active citizens for the communities and the environments that we interact in.
So do you think that, you just mentioned that he's not doing things that are so different, that there's been these values that have been acted on by the community. Do you think that the public, the business sector and the consumer sector are just more aware of this and they're more eager to find out and embrace these values that have been a part of the company's history?
I think that, you know, it's a growing general trend. I mean, when we look at the history of, let's say, the environmental movement, you know, dating back, you know, decades now, I think there's been this increased awareness in a consumer population that has grown from maybe more of a kind of concern for environmental peril that's now gotten much more sophisticated and gotten to a point of, you know, corporations' role in planet stewardship, if, for lack of a better word. And so I think, you know, as corporations have become a major player in our society, we should demand and expect them to be accountable for their business actions. And so you know, as Timberland has tried to incorporate that ethos into our current day thinking, I don't think it's necessarily so different than what we've done in the past. I think there's been a sophistication and an increased awareness, as you mentioned, on the part of maybe more everyday people in what corporations' role should be in or could be in our society. And I think that's wonderful. I think the opportunity, as I mentioned before, to leverage our influence to create and help innovate to create a better world is really important.
So because Timberland is a publicly traded company, does this affect your job? Does it restrict Timberland's sustainability goals or approach?
I don't think so at all, actually. As I mentioned, you know, we do have great support for our CSR initiatives from the top. Not only is our CEO, you know, intimately involved and supportive in these projects, but we also have a board level CSR committee, which I know, you know, not many publicly traded companies have, but that's because we're really trying to demonstrate the value that CSR brings to the business and also ensure that, you know, it's being managed in the same way as any of our other programs or business strategies. I think it's very important to ensure that you have both top-down leadership as well as bottom-up or, you know, more employee engagement and on these issues. I think being a public company means that we have to, quote unquote, you know, prove the model of commerce and justice even more and really ensure that we can say, you know, corporate responsibility is providing value to the business. But in reality, that should be a requirement of any activity that a company does, especially a public company does. And so I think being a publicly traded company really does allow us to look at our programs and our commitments with rigor to ensure that they are contributing to the overall business that we're in. I don't feel that it restricts my goals or my approach. I think it's important for us to ensure that, you know, we are being realistic about the nature in which our company operates. We're part of the capitalist society. But at the same time, I think to the extent that we can ensure that we are leveraging that business influence, as I mentioned before, to really, you know, reduce our own contribution to climate change, but also ensure that we're helping our supply chain to do the same. You know, that's just one example of how I think being accountable for our own goals and maybe walking the talk, so to speak, so that we have credible reason to spend time on those activities and demonstrate value to our shareholders from a cost savings or a risk management perspective. It also allows us to have credible conversations with our supply chain, which not only helps us, you know, reduce risk to our overall business, but also helps us create, you know, in this case, even further reductions in the contribution to climate change, which, you know, we all need to play a part in order to manage that environmental issue.
There's a lot of people that believe that business has an obligation to be responsible in terms of its social practices and its environmental practices, but there are still some people who think that business is only responsible to its shareholders and profit. Because I love the idea of the board-level CSR committee, but because you're still a publicly traded company, does Timberland find itself having to reconcile profit versus other initiatives that could, I mean, the idea is to bring long-term profit, but sometimes they have to take a short-term hit. Is there a balancing act that goes on there?
I don't think so. You know, I certainly that's a tension that every business faces from the long-term and short-term perspective and being accountable to our shareholders. You know, I think what's been interesting is as we've seen more consumer interest in general sustainability issues, we've been able to rely on some of our credible programs to help propel the business forward. And so when you look at, you know, how does that reflect shareholder value or the concept of being a public company, we're trying to use our CSR credentials to actually innovate and put our business in a different position or a better position. And a great example there would be our Earthkeeper products, which are products that kind of best demonstrate our environmental values in action. There are certain criteria in terms of materials use and overall selection of the design process in terms of eliminating or actually you should strike that out. I shouldn't say eliminated when you edit it, but using materials that can help us lessen our product's environmental impact from the design stage. And so our Earthkeeper products are one of the fastest growing products in our line. And I think part of that is because we can recognize and leverage some of the great work that we've done on our own product design and environmental stewardship programs, but also give the consumer a product that they have increasing interest in. And so when we see growth in our Earthkeeper products in terms of sales and general interest, you know, we can see that that's a direct return and delivery back to the business in terms of what value our CSR brings to our shareholders and to the overall financial health of our company.
So I wanted to get into the Earthkeeper platform or microsite, aside from the products. I know that's part of it, but what was the strategy or the thinking behind developing the separate platform, the goal is to engage people in environmental stewardship? And how effective has it been? How do you measure the impact of it? And does it require a lot of resources?
Okay, so our Earthkeeper platform, as you said, is Timberland's consumer engagement portal, and it really is designed to provide a space to create a community of folks that are interested in preserving and being stewards of the places where they live and work. And so clearly it does have a very environmental focus, but we do feel that it, you know, should also reflect our commitment to engaging communities and being socially responsible as well. We first developed this site and the whole Earthkeeper strategy as a way to say, you know, here's something that Timberland is doing in terms of being accountable and engaged in our own environmental impact. And we know that consumers have an interest there as well. And so could we merge these concepts of, you know, creating Timberland's own accountability program and standpoint and also provide an opportunity for consumers to engage in that kind of stewardship ethic and activities with us. And so when we look at earthkeeping, we actually think of earthkeeping as something that's much bigger than Timberland or a Timberland campaign. Earthkeeping is something that every company, every stakeholder, every citizen should be a part of in order to lessen our overall impacts on our planet and also, you know, try to improve upon those impacts. And so the website itself was something that we experimented with in many different ways. You know, I think we have a presence on YouTube, we have a presence on Facebook, we have a pretty big presence on Twitter, and we've also worked with different groups like Change and Just Means. And as we've experimented with different types of engagement, kind of using social media tools, we knew that we needed to be where our stakeholders are showing up, and that's, you know, we know that folks go to Twitter to share information in, you know, tiny fragments of sentences, but, you know, to really interact with each other. We know that people go to YouTube to watch videos. They don't go there to play games. We know that people go to Facebook maybe to share information within a community. So we know that we need to be showing up in these places because that's where our stakeholders are and that's where they're having discussions about Timberland. And to be honest, even if we didn't show up there, they'd be having those discussions. But we also know that stakeholders, you know, come to Timberland first to get information about us and about our program. And so I think that the Earthkeeper site was developed separately as a way to help, you know, create a community and hopefully connect Timberland's own programs with the aspirations and activities of our consumers. But we also wanted to make sure we did have this very diversified strategy. So on the Earthkeeper site, you'll find our blog, you'll find information about our programs, but we also push that out through these other social media tools to ensure that, you know, we're being comprehensive and trying to interact where people find themselves. In terms of how we measure success, you know, clearly looking at the number of people that we're interacting with, the number of places that we show up. But I also think that it's important for us to really look at the quality of interaction that's happening. You know, it's great to get more and more people aware of and interested in some of our campaigns and activities, but we also want to make sure that, you know, they're doing so with us with real credible intent to maybe improve some of their own impacts in their own lives. And hopefully through this earthkeeping kind of philosophy, we can create a much larger movement that is committed to the responsibility agenda that we've incorporated into our own company, but that we also feel can be an amazing citizen and consumer empowerment tool for people to make changes in their everyday lives.
Has it taken a lot of resources in terms of manpower or money to create and maintain this? Does it seem to be an effective investment in that sense?
Well, as I said, I think that, you know, if people or brands are, you know, not necessarily focusing or spending a lot of time in these spaces, that, you know, basically that means that a lot of other people, not core to your company or maybe not telling your stories in the same way, are going to be, you know, talking about you for you. So I think that, you know, the investment, you know, is that something that's been proven or necessary? I mean, I think as a consumer-facing company, it's a no-brainer. We have to show up and we have to participate in these venues. In terms of resources, you know, I think that it has taken a lot. You know, we definitely have a combination of folks from our marketing and communication and digital teams, as well as folks like me from our CSR teams helping to provide content. But, you know, at the same time, it doesn't have to be as many resources as you think. I think we'd always like to have more resources because all the different folks that I mentioned to you, you'll notice that not one of them has the title of website or social media manager. And I think in some other companies that position may exist. We're a pretty small company. And so I think all of the different roles that I mentioned, you know, do touch upon this space. So we're working on it kind of as a team effort. But at the same time, you know, we all also have many other things that we're responsible for. So I think it's important to make sure that you're being strategic in the way that you use your resources, but also, you know, so many of these presences, you know, really do connect with, you know, real marketing and consumer engagement techniques that have evolved from, you know, just the traditional print ads or even TV ads, which, of course, we still do, but we know that consumers and other stakeholders show up in different places, so we have to ensure that our own strategies and resources to deploy those strategies keep up pace with the changes that are taking place.
I've been a proponent of Timberland as a company, a consumer initially when I was younger, and then as I became involved in social responsibility and business, as really admiring Timberland's efforts and programs. And one of the things that I also am very impressed with is the engagement of Timberland's CEO, Jeff Schwartz, as you said, and he seems really to be an active part of the community in terms of social media and social responsibility. So I have a lot of admiration for Timberland and what you've done, but I also want to give you a chance to talk about what are some of the things that you hope to accomplish in, you know, maybe the short term or the long term.
Well, I think, you know, all of our programs have bold goals that are trying to, you know, have our business help make it better in communities at large. And, you know, we have a bold goal associated with each one of our four pillar areas. So, for example, this year, 2010, we've committed to reducing our greenhouse gas emissions by 50% over our 2006 baseline. And that's a really aggressive emissions reduction target. It's something we've been working towards for a while. As of the end of last year, we had already achieved 36% emissions reductions. And so that's something that we're really excited about continuing marching down that path. And, we have programs in place to hopefully meet that goal by the end of the year. And then the question is, you know, so now that we've met that aggressive goal, how can you do even more? You know, when we look at that goal, we know that our carbon footprint that's measured by or that's included in that goal only accounts for about 4% of our total carbon footprint. It's our owned and operated business and also our employee business travel, including airline travel. And so we recognize that, you know, getting to that emissions reduction as an example of one goal is an incredibly important goal for us to meet, not only because we're managing our own impacts, but then it gives us almost a license or credibility to talk with our supply chain, where in reality that's where the majority of our carbon footprint sits. And clearly we're doing things, you know, between when we set that goal, you know, over 5 years ago and now. But I think that once we've gotten to a really good sense of managing our own carbon footprint, we have much more credibility to talk with our factories, to look at our supply chain logistics, to look at our product design, and look at the emissions that come even from the raw materials that we're using, and incentivize our designers to actually choose maybe less carbon-intensive materials in actually creating our products, or work with our factories on, you know, energy efficiency projects. Because the first thing that they would say to us would be, you know, well, have you put these programs in place in your own company, you know, before you are even asking us to do it? So those types of activities are in play. You know, some other things that I think we're really excited about is looking at opportunities to innovate and try to bring more consumers and more different types of stakeholders into our work and kind of to look to reward businesses for their responsible activities. We have something called the Green Index, which is a product-specific environmental label that communicates to consumers the environmental impacts of our products. And by the end of 2011, we are planning to have all of Timberland's footwear scored with this Green Index so we can really communicate the environmental impacts of our products. But we also know that while that's going to be a huge accomplishment and a really bold goal, that it really doesn't matter if Timberland alone is labeling our footwear products. We know that consumers shop in places that most of the time aren't necessarily just Timberland stores. And so when you're looking to empower consumers to make responsible purchasing decisions, they need to have comparability. And so one example of some work that we've been doing for a while and that we hope will continue to push forward is our work with the Outdoor Industry Association. We helped form an environmental working group that brings together over 40 different brands to create an industry standard for environmental impact measurement that one day could be maybe the evolution of this labeling idea, so that you could have comparable information when you pick up a Timberland shoe and when you pick up somebody else's shoe, or when you look at a Timberland shoe and how does that compare to a tent, and looking at all different types of environmental impacts that outdoor products have. And so what's really exciting is that the Outdoor Industry Association is moving forward with that industry collaboration and labeling initiative. And so that's going to give some of the work that we've done so much more meaning. But what it's really going to do is put the power of responsible decision-making into the hands of the consumer. And the minute that consumers actually have that comparable information coupled with the fact that there is this increasing awareness, I think we're going to start to see some real shifts in the way that businesses are, you know, rewarded for some of their activities. And we hope, based on all of the work that we've done, both internally and in this collaborative environment, that some of our own commitments will then be further rewarded by the marketplace.
And that's a really interesting component, the bringing in the consumers and then changing and driving consumer behavior. So that's something that personally excites me. And you just mentioned comparability, which is an interesting thing. And as someone who's leading these CSR, not only the strategy, but also the reporting, how difficult is it when there's not one metric? I mean, we have some, we have the Global Reporting Index, which a lot of companies use, but is that something that is difficult for you, or would you be someone, maybe on a personal or company level, who's advocating for one standard or metric?
Well, we are big proponents and users of the Global Reporting Initiative. We do treat it as kind of the gold standard and industry standard for sustainability reporting. But we also know that that type of information that's found in our CSR reporting coupled with storytelling, and even if you went and just looked at the index for our GRI indicators, you could do a direct comparison between, you know, how our GRI metrics showing up in our report versus, you know, another peer company's report. But we also know that, you know, consumers aren't normally the kind of target audience for those types of reports. And so I think that's why this idea of communicating the impacts of our business and of our products at a level where people, are digesting information and can make sense of it, maybe not by reading a 30-page report, which, as I mentioned earlier, is a huge improvement in my mind in terms of accessibility compared to a 100-page report in the past. But we also know that, you know, consumers aren't going to be reading them. So the more that we can communicate, you know, at the product level or by making sure that there is comparability in the standards that other stakeholders other than CSR practitioners are familiar with, I think the better. That's why we're so committed to, you know, this industry collaboration that's being spearheaded by the Outdoor Industry Association, the OIA. And I think that, you know, we will always be a huge proponent of using standards because I think it does help promote that comparability. You know, there are standards for all different types of things that we do. There's environmental management standards. There's social compliance standards. And I wouldn't say that we're standards crazy, but we recognize the benefit of having, you know, direct collaboration in both the creation of those standards as well as ensuring that stakeholders understand what those standards are supposed to represent. But then we also want to make sure that comparability is indeed possible, and that's why that we do try to uphold and incorporate those standards into as much as we can.
It's been wonderful to speak with you about some of Timberland's initiatives and goals, and I've really enjoyed the perspective that you've brought to it.
We really enjoyed talking with you as well, and look forward to seeing the article.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.